It used to be chill. It's all up in smoke. I think I'm still fun. Parenting's a joke.
Hello, listeners. Cool. This is Parenting is a Joke. I'm a New Yorker magazine you are never going to read, named Ophira Eisenberg. And on the show, we bring together professional stand-up comedians and funny people to talk about their creative lives and their work, and also what it's like to do that while raising kids. That's right. How the fuck are they doing it? I only let my son play free iPad games. Look at me with my strict boundaries and rules. So he downloaded one this weekend called Plague Inc. Okay, you get a world map, and then you choose if you're a virus or a bacteria, and whether you travel by air, water, or food. And you also get to choose that when you infect people, if they die or get sick. And then you try to infect the world. That's the game. Mm-hmm. It's like Risk, but with a 2019 COVID twist. So I said to him, why are you interested in playing this dark game where people die from a virus? Why can't you just play Legos, is what I always want to say. But instead I say something where you're building and healing. And he said, well, if you want the cure, you have to pay $4. So I bought it. Yeah. I figured, you know, I was curing a few things, really, but no, I was just foiled again by a dumb app, throwing $4 as an add-on, trying to create some positivity. But at least now, when he looks at a map, he can point out Canada, Algeria, and Peru. Yeah, because that's where he infected the most people. That's weird, too. My guest today is Julia Scotti, and we talk about her comedy career and her coming out story.
I came out on national television on America's Got Talent. You're going to go big or go home, that's what I say.
More with me and Julia Scotti right after these bite-sized ads.
This is your moment, your time to shine, your comeback. You're ready for the next step in your career, and you want an education employers respect. So you're not just going back to school. You're coming back with Purdue Global. Backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected public universities, Purdue Global is built for people who bring their life experience into the online classroom. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
With every CBD product claiming to do something different, it's nearly impossible to decide what's best for you. Lazarus Naturals pioneered the farm-to-front-door model of transparency, where they handle each step of the production process to ensure quality, potency, and consistency. Scannable labels allow you to see the test results of your hemp batch so you can be confident in the safety and quality. Visit LazarusNaturals.com today. Lazarus Naturals, committed to improving your life as well as the world around you. Not available in Idaho, Iowa, or South Dakota.
Happy spring equinox. It's here. It's wild, isn't it? Yeah. You know what's wild? My kid's behavior. And apparently, this is a thing. It's not just him. There are actually articles about the spring behavior roller coaster, especially for elementary school kids. So anytime I see the therapist, she's like, oh yeah, this time of year, my kid patients, they are the worst. And part of it is because spring. And then also, they've just figured out how school works now. So there's nothing new. And it's sort of this weird time where there's no holidays. You know, they're not quite sliding into the finish line, but there's nothing new. So they're all rattled and freaking out. Fun. Yeah. Shout out to the teachers. Good luck. The other roller coaster I'm on is my mom-friend journey. Not going well. I talked about it last week. You know what? And I was just so surprised. You put these things out there sometimes, and then people get back to me. And so many moms told me they feel the same way. And it just made me so sad. I was like, all of these cool people are also lonely. We got to get together. My problem is that I try too hard. I try too hard with my, you know, pickup mom school banter, trying to fit in, trying to, I don't know, be liked. And my jokes do not land. It's just getting worse. Okay, here's the latest. So once again, I thought we were all just having fun. And the conversation turned to sex with your partner after having kids. And I said, I got right in there, and I said, oh my God, blowjobs? Those are the most precious currency in a relationship because that is the first to go, okay, as time moves forward. I mean, who wants to give a blowjob anyway? And one woman raised her hand, so I high-fived it, and then she corrected me. She said, no, I was saying I do. I like giving blowjobs. I like it still. And the other moms nodded in agreement. Who are you people? I mean, come on. I was shamed. Oh, yeah, for not being the perfect woman, partner, mom, blowjob giver. You know what? I don't want to join your group anymore. I am done with it. Do I care? Do I try to win over these moms or do I just forget about it? Do I buy Dale Carnegie's book on how to influence people and make friends? Or do I just stop talking about fellatio and stuffing kids into bags on the playground? That's what I bombed with last week. I'm up for suggestions, I guess, except for joining one of those mom finder friend apps. I'm good, okay? I can't do Tinder moms. At least I have my comedy friends. So let's dive right into this great conversation with Julia Scotti. Everybody, I'm excited for my guest today because we haven't talked in a while. So it's always great to have an opportunity to get together. She performs stand-up all over the country. She is the star of the critically acclaimed documentary, Julia Scotti, funny that way. And you can see her on Showtime as one of the performers in More Funny Women of a Certain Age. Julia Scotti, hello.
Wow, I'm special. Look at all this stuff. Hi.
It's just true.
So I even forgot to mention my Nobel Prize that I won.
That would be nice if a comic once won the Nobel Prize. That's how we would know the Nobel Prize is over.
I was thinking about that the other day. There should be a Nobel Prize for comedy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If laughter is the best medicine, who is doling out the best medicine these days?
Who's finding the cure for the worldwide ennui?
Ennui.
That we currently...
Yeah.
That's my
who's,
new word.
Who is the true... truth teller?
I don't. It would be you. I'm going to vote for you.
I always start by asking the same question, which is, what are the ages and names, if you feel comfortable, of your kids?
Well, I'll give you the ages.
But
they prefer not to have their names.
Understood.
I have a 44-year-old, believe it or not, for my first marriage. I've been married multiple times.
Okay.
I have a 34-year-old. She's going to be 35 this year, and my other son is going to be 32.
Okay. I mean, on one level, your parenting duties feel done?
They're cooked. Yeah, I I wash my hands of the whole thing.
Yeah.
I was on the road a lot during when they were growing up. So there were multiple divorces going on too. So I had to juggle career and trying not to be a horrible parent. And I was always afraid of history repeating itself because my parents divorced when I was 6 years old.
Okay.
And so, so I'm completely skillless when it comes to dealing with that sort of thing. But I did my best,
Yeah. And do any of your kids have kids? Are you a grandparent?
No, they vowed. after their experience with me. No, they haven't been exposed to the best of domestic circumstances. Let's put it that way. Yeah. So no children.
Okay. So they are just living lives and being wealthy because they don't have to spend the money on children.
Exactly. Lives of quiet splendor and,
travel.
A feeling of Zen peace, in their souls. And yeah.
So you're a nationally headlining comedian. You are a former teacher, sixth grade.
Well, I taught for 20 years. And then when my niece likes to call it, the event happened. And then as comics are, we don't deal well with authority figures. Hmm. So I decided that teaching, I want to go back to comedy, and so I left teaching and And here I am.
And the event that you were saying for our listeners is that you transitioned.
I did. I'm transgender. Transitioned in 20, well, it began in 1999, and I fully transitioned in 2021.
You're doing comedy as a man, and then you take a 10-year break, you become a teacher, you decide this is not what I want to do, and then you decide to go back to the stage, and you are coming back as a woman. So first, my first question is, what actually lured you back onto the stage after all those years?
What the hell was I thinking? Stand-up is like the Hotel California. You can check out anytime you want, but you can never leave. Right? And about when I finished teaching, I reached out to a friend of mine. She's a comic from Philadelphia named Chris Rich. We hadn't seen each other in a long time. She goes, let's have lunch. I said, great. Over the course of the lunch, she said to me, when are you coming back to comedy? I said, I'm not coming back. I'm 60-something years old. I'm transgender. Who the hell wants to see me, you know? And she said, you know you want to. And of course I did. You know, a comic doesn't want to. She goes, why don't you put a set together and come on out and do it? And I said, no. So I did. And again, you know, drug addicts that we are, getting on stage and you hear that applause and laughter again. That's all she wrote.
That's it.
You know, from there, that was all I needed. I'm so easy.
Obviously, you notice differences. But did you notice any differences about, like, did you feel like you had to come out at the beginning of your set every time?
Well, I did come out. That was one of them. I had personal criteria. There were only two. I wanted to be totally honest about who and what I was. And I wanted to be fearless about it. I wasn't going to shy away from it. That was the first test of it. And they came out at this club in Bristol, Pennsylvania, which is a blue-collar club. And
right.
Not exactly a liberal, a bastion of liberal thinking. And I came out, and that was the first thing I said. I graduated college. I've been away. I graduated college. I got divorced. And, oh, yeah, I had a sex change. And the audience is like, you know that scene in the in Young Frankenstein where they do a putting on the Ritz and the audience is just like,
yeah, exactly.
It was like that. So, and I had to keep saying it. No, I really am transgender. I really am. And they still weren't getting it. And finally, on the third time, they believed me. They didn't know what to do. I don't think they'd ever. It's like seeing a unicorn in person for the first time. And I'm like, it's okay. It's not contagious. You can touch me. I mean, so it was that kind of stuff. That was 11, 12 years ago now. It was a different world back then.
Yes.
And so I know it doesn't seem like a long time ago, but it really, really was.
It seems to me like the last 5 years was the longest amount of time ever in the history of time. So...
Yeah, I'll give you that.
So you're 11 years. I mean, that's what I just think. It's almost like it was double. But obviously, it was like you say, if you go out now in an audience, let's just say same kind of scenario.
Well, now it's sort of part of my, my act is there's about 10-15 minutes devoted to that. But I came out on national television, you know, on America's Got Talent. You're going to go big or go home, that's what I say.
Right. And what was that like?
Well, that was an interesting experience, too. 13 million people. I call it the mother of all, you know, coming out stories.
Yeah.
There was a moment, you know, when you're doing stand-up, there's that little voices in your head, like the board of directors, I call them, that they're always making executive decisions. You know, should we say this? Should we say that?
Yeah.
And AGT left it up to me as to whether or not I wanted to come out. And I still hadn't decided. I mean, I'm out there doing the set. And I said, well, all right, if I do come out, I'm not going to come out until after the set because I want to be judged on the set only. And it went well. And then, you know, and then Howie asked that question. I said, oh, what the hell? You know, just go for it. Well, all of a sudden they stood up and they started screaming and yelling and clapping. And I was like, oh, okay. You know, I can do this. I figured at my age, what was the worst they could do? Kill me? I had arthritis anyway. It wasn't like I was going to be on Dancing with the Stars, you know.
So it airs and What is the response? Like, I'm sure you're receiving response.
Oh, I mean, local papers are calling me. They're tracking me down. I can't go to the supermarket because people are like, yeah, it was really weird. I get done Caroline's. I was booked in Caroline's. It's in Times Square.
Yeah.
People are running up to me. Truck drivers. I swear, you hear about celebrities going, yeah, truck drivers going, that actually happened. Truck drivers like, I saw you last night. I'm like, oh, okay. And it's exciting, but it's kind of creepy, you know? Well, you must get that too. You're
no.
No?
At that point, were you like, oh my goodness, I'm selling tickets. This is a different phase of my career.
Yeah, I called Tom and Jenny. He's my manager, Tom and Jenny. I call him up and I go, we're asking for more money. We're up in the price. I want to take a step back, if you don't mind, with my kid.
Of course.
Because I had to really think about it, whether I was going to come out on TV because of how it would affect my kids.
Well, I was going to ask about that for sure.
I always said to them, especially when I came out to them as kids, they were much younger when they came out. It was hard. It was agonizing to make that decision because it could traumatize. You know, I was essentially killing their father. When they were little. But then I said, you know, I can't let that be my deciding factor, because how can I tell them as a parent to be true to themselves if I can't be true to myself? And I knew as sure as I'm talking to you that this was the right decision for me at the time. We were divorced already, so it was not like I was living there with them. And it led to a 14-year absence in their lives. They decided, you know, well, they didn't decide, but their mother decided that I shouldn't be in their life.
Was she scared?
I don't know what she was. I mean, I don't want to speculate on her thinking processes. I just know that it was just awful. Those years going through this is such a personal experience, especially back then, because it was so new. And so I was embarrassed. I had a lot of shame. I was embarrassed for what my kids might be going through or what they were being called. I didn't care about me. So bringing it back to AGT, admitting in front of the entire, really the world, it's not just America, that I was getting emails from Australia and Brazil and England. I mean, it was crazy. And I had to take that into consideration, you know, when it came to the kids. But be to thine own self be true.
Yes. During the time when you weren't, potentially had no contact with your kids, did you still send birthday cards or anything, or was it just nothing?
I tried to, you know, to send emails and text messages and whatever I could do. My mother was still alive at the time. And so I would hear from her. What they were doing, what they, you know, and then I would send a little, you know, hey, I heard you had a great football game or whatever. And then she would give me, you know, their school pictures, you know. And so I have these series of pictures of them growing up.
Oh, wow.
And that was my only, you know, the only way I could identify them on the street if I saw them, you know.
Yeah.
It was really bad. It was really, 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 really bad.
But it's changed.
It's changed, but it's never going to be the way it should, because I missed everything, you know, in their lives. We're more like, we're more friendly than parent-child, you know.
Okay. When did it change? I mean, we're talking three different people here, so I can imagine each person had their own relationship.
It actually started with my son, who was the baby. He opened the door. Well, actually, I kind of opened it. I was always, like, when his birthday would come around, I would just say, hey, happy birthday. And then he started to respond to my text. And I was like, oh, maybe he's opening the door. And little by little, you know, the door opened. My daughter was a little harder.
Going back to the very beginning, did you always want to have children?
Now that I have them,
Sure.
I can't imagine my life.
Of course.
But as a young comic, and having come from the childhood environment that I did, it was a very bad situation. My father was an alcoholic. He left when I was six. My mother was what they called it, paranoid schizophrenic back then, in and out of mental hospitals a couple of times. You know, shock therapy, all that. So, and I was Catholic on top of it.
I
don't mean to minimize the value of what they did to me, you know, because this was not progressive Catholic. This is going my way, beat the hell out of you, nun kind of Catholic.
Wow. Know? Yeah.
Yeah. So all of those things combined, I don't want to swear on your show, but
you can.
Oh, it fucked you up.
Yeah. You know?
It does. When it came to children, I did not really want to recreate that, and especially when my first marriage broke up. You know, I always felt like history was repeating itself.
And right. So, and also as a stand-up, I imagine, were you at all like, how does this work?
Well, there's no rule. You know this. Yes. Back then, there were no rules for stand-ups. I'm like, what do we do? You know, I want to go. I got to go on the road. I got to go into the city every night. I got to, you know, not make any money for years. I got to keep three jobs, and still be a parent. I mean, it was juggling chainsaws, you know?
Yeah. I know that in your documentary, you know, there is this really very poignant moment where your son is there and you're watching old footage of your stand-up.
There's a part in the movie where we're looking at me and doing this anti-trans bit. And is that the part you're talking about?
Yeah.
Yeah. And I forgot the thing even existed.
That was your material.
It was my material.
Yeah.
And the minute I saw it, I knew what it was. And you can see in the movie where I go, because you want to turn this off. I'm like, no. You know, and then as it unfolded, I was like, stop, shut up, Julia. You know, but at the time I was going through that gender identity thing at the time, I just didn't understand what it was. I thought it was sexual identity. I thought I was gay. And, you know, there's no information. That's the thing I keep trying to explain to people. It's not like today. There was no internet. There was nothing.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. Who did you go to?
My Kate, the woman you hear at the end of the movie that's on the phone. She's just the love of my life. And to this day, I love her. There's nobody else in my life. Never will be. And she got me to understand what it was. I had my two previous wives had called me a woman a million times. You're acting like a woman. You're being a woman, you know. Then my mother tells me that she thought she was having a girl right up until I was born. And I was like, oh, Jesus. All right. But it didn't sink in until Kate said it. And she said it at a moment in our relationship where I was desperate. I was suicidal, you know, because I didn't know what was wrong with me. Wrong is a bad word. I didn't know what it was.
What was going through you? Yeah. And when you say that your partners would say you're acting like a woman, what do you in what context?
I don't know. To this day, I don't know. They would say, you know, you're such a woman. Why are you you're such a woman? Like saying it as a pejorative. I remember one of them used to say just because I used to like musicals, you know.
Sure.
But that was, you know, that's
so stereotypical. So stereotypical.
But that's, you know, that's the kind of shit I got from them. It's like, you know, I all right, I like musicals. Like, yeah, I cry at West Side Story. What do you want from me?
You're not allowed to?
Yeah, well, back then, you know, not if you were an Italian guy. No, Italian guys didn't cry at West Side Story. No.
So it's interesting, though, you know, that you're transitioning. You go back to college. You become a teacher. And as I understand, like, very difficult period in the sense that you did not have any contact with your kids. And, I mean, listen, I just can't even imagine how devastating that is.
Well, teaching was my salvation because I was able to, you know, I started out working for the Association of Retarded Citizens, ARC. That was what it's called. And I was, I worked for them for 6 months and I had a client, profoundly brain damaged, blind, deaf. I mean, Korean, didn't understand English at all. And they gave me this kid and he was violent and I grew to love him. And I taught him how to eat with the other people. This kid could never eat by himself. And so I stayed there until 9/11 happened. That day I had him in I had him in the car because I used to pick him up at work. And I've never told this story before. See what you did? You brought. He was in the back of the van with me, and Howard Stern was on, who just did the most amazing job of reporting the events of that day. And I'm in the car with, in the van, he's in the back, and he's rubbing saliva on my head, and he's just doing awful things to me, and, you know, but that's what he did. But all I could think of was, I want to see my kids. I want to leave this kid home and go to run to my kids, because I don't know if this is the end of the world. I don't know what's going on.
Right.
You know, and I can't go see them. I'm not allowed to see them. It just broke my heart, but I got him to the center where we taught, and we got through that day, as we all know. We got through the days after, and about, you know, a couple of weeks after 9/11, I got a call. I had been sending out resumes to the school systems, and I got a call from this one school system. Would I like, there was a woman going out on maternity leave, which I found terribly ironic. You know, they wanted to interview me for the position. And so I went and I got the job, and I left, and I stayed at this school for 7 years. Love my kids. I love my kids. And they filled, my original point was, they filled so much of that hole in my heart and my soul.
Yeah.
The not having my kids with me, you know.
Now, I'm sorry, this is a stupid question. Did you have to come out to the administration? Did you have to?
I was pre-op too at that point.
Okay.
But I was living as Julia. You have to live a year in your new identity before they'll approve you for any kind of surgery. That's the way it was.
Okay.
And I don't know if it's still the same way. My license said Julia.
Mm-hmm.
Had my name changed. But there was, New Jersey wouldn't change the gender.
Oh, really?
And I hope to God that they wouldn't have looked at it, you know. And so, because you have to get a background check and everything. And,
sure.
And I don't know what was showing up on it. Nobody ever said anything to me. And either they knew and didn't want to say, or I got caught. Well, the bureaucracy saved me. Nobody thought that.
Right, they just didn't look at it.
A few times I was glad that, you know, bureaucracy was around. But I would, whenever I had a kid in, you know, alone in the class, like if I was, working with him or her, and I always did it where we sat in front of the door where you could see me, and the door was always open, because at that point, there were no laws to protect me.
Right. And you were aware of that. You were like, I have to take this into my own hands.
Oh, was I? Yeah. My first day of teaching. Now, I've performed in front of thousands of people, but if you've never taught, walking into a classroom first time, and walking into a classroom as a transgender woman, pre-op, you know, so my first, and I tell this story.
With 12-year-olds or whatever, like one of the most insane hormonal ages.
Not even at the beginning of the year. I came in a month into year, right? And I go, I could do this. So first day of school, this kid at the end of the day puts a piece of paper on my desk. You know, I don't know when he dropped it there, but I opened it up. I go, oh, one of these kids is saying welcome. I open it up. It says, here, everybody thinks you're a man. It hit me. Yeah, that's exactly the way it hit me. It was like a gut punch. And I could feel myself getting naughty and ready to just lose my shit. I was starting to cry. I grabbed all my stuff. And I ran out of the school and went home. It was the end of the day. And I'm driving down Route 9. I remember this. Like, tears are pouring out. And I go, I'm going to kill myself. That's all there is. I drove over to Lavalette, New Jersey, when I was a kid, I had spent summers. And it was October. It was a rainy day. And just nobody was there. The season was over. And I sat in the car on the bay, overlooking the bay. And I was going to just drive the car off the pier.
And oh my
nobody
God.
Would have seen me. And that would have been the end of it. Tutti frutti, right? I don't know what stopped me. At the very last, I had my hand on the gear shift. It was in drive. Something just said, no, you've worked too hard to get through college at such a late age, stage of your life. There's something more for you to do yet. It's not time. And if you let this 12-year-old, I remember the voice in my head was like, this 12-year-old punk kid is not going to get the best of you. And so I put the car in park. I decided to go home. I came back the next, I went back to school the next day, didn't say a word about what had happened. And the next day, and the next day, and 7 years later, I left there. My heart was breaking because I didn't want to leave.
Oh,
yeah.
I am thinking as you were telling the story, you know, this is, yes, it's a 12-year-old, and yes, they can be brutal, but obviously hitting you at a point where not only you're, you know, it's a pretty vulnerable time in your life.
Oh, yeah.
Just, you know, the way that kids, I think, can drive a stake through someone's heart with just blurting out the most id kind of statements. And you think of a comedy audience and, you know, they're drunken hecklers. People have said some terrible things to me. There is still a tiny bit of the adult brain that cannot be as cutting as a kid.
Oh, no, especially on your first day. Now, don't forget, right. I went back to college at 48. I was still man when I went back and I graduated as male and the, you know, all the changes happened afterwards, but I'd worked so hard. I graduated at the top of my class. I had like a 3.87 GPA. I was so proud of myself. And I really wanted to be a good teacher because I had had one of the few people in my early life in high school that had affected me in a positive way was a teacher.
Okay.
I was a really troubled kid, you know, in high school. And I was always getting into trouble. But I was smart, you know, and for the teachers that I wanted to perform for, I did. And this particular one, I won't mention her name. She's still alive. She, senior year, I was walking past her office and she called, my name was Richard. That's what my, and she, and I hear her just go, Richard, just like that. I went, oh shit, what did I do? So I popped, sit down. She did one of these, so sit down. So I sat down and she goes, what are your plans for college? Where are you going to college? I'm not going to college. We don't have any money to send me to college. I got to support my mother. Besides that, I'm going to be a musician. I'm going to be in show business. I'm not college. And she said to me, well, what if I paid for your college education?
Well.
And I was like, what? and I'm getting teary thinking about it. Sorry. She goes, call it a loan. She goes, call it a gift, whatever you want to do. She goes, I will pay for your education.
I'm getting teary as you're saying this. Well,
and because I was a dumbass kid, I said no, but I never forgot it. She was the first person in my life who ever just reached out. And so when I decided to be a teacher, I told her, you know, I wrote her a letter. And I wanted to be just like her. I wanted to be as good a teacher as her. I believe that you have to, wherever you are at the moment is where you're supposed to be. And my 7 years in that school were exactly where I was supposed to be.
If I may, it sounds to me like you were a parent to many.
Well, I've always said that the kids gave me back more than I gave them in terms of that. And you're right. I felt like a lot of them, you know, their mothers or fathers were in jail or they were in drugs and just with really, really troubled kids. And those are the kids I wanted. Give me those. I was like the Emma Lazarus, you know, give me your tire, get poor, your kids punching lockers for no apparent reason, because I felt a kinship with them.
This is it, your moment. This is your time to make your comeback with Purdue Global. When you come back with a Purdue Global degree, you create opportunity for yourself, your family, and your future. It's a degree you can be proud of, a degree that employers will trust and respect. Purdue Global offers working adults like you over 175 flexible degree programs to meet your specific career goals. These include associate, bachelor's, master's, and doctoral degrees and certificates. Purdue Global degree programs range from nursing to business to communication and more. Whatever your interest, we have the degree that will move you forward. You have the knowledge. You have the experience. Now it's time to get credit for the work you've done and earn the recognition you deserve with Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. You know you're worth it. We do too. So don't wait another second to get the degree that will take your career to the next level. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Hi, I'm Cindy Crawford, and I'm the founder of Meaningful Beauty. When Dr. Sabah and I decided to do a skincare line together, he said to me, we are going to give women meaningful beauty. And I said, that's exactly right. We want to give women meaningful beauty, which means each and every product is meaningful. It has a reason to exist. It's efficacious. You're going to get results. And then you just go out and live your life.
Meaningful beauty. Confidence is beautiful. Learn more at meaningfulbeauty.com. With every CBD product claiming to do something different, it's nearly impossible to decide what's best for you. Lazarus Naturals pioneered the farm-to-front-door model of transparency where they handle each step of the production process to ensure quality, potency, and consistency. Scannable labels allow you to see the test results of your hemp batch so you can be confident in the safety and quality. Visit LazarusNaturals.com today. Lazarus Naturals, committed to improving your life as well as the world around you. Not available in Idaho, Iowa, or South Dakota.
Now, your son is doing comedy, is that right?
He loves comedy.
Okay.
But not stand-up. That's not his forte. He's
Thank
tried it.
God.
Yeah, I told him the same thing. He loves sketch comedy, but he's a writer primarily.
Okay.
That's what he does.
Do you help him, encourage him? Do you ever?
Nope. My yeah, I got enough troubles with my own comedy. Besides, he doesn't need me.
He's already good at it.
When they were little, I especially him. In his crib in the morning, I would always do shtick with him. But, like when he was like 2 or 3, I think, I had 2 jokes that I told my kids, the first jokes that they ever heard. And one was the best time to go to the dentist, 2:30.
The best.
It is.
Guaranteed laugh.
It's a classic.
Love it.
The other one was, why will you never starve in the desert? Because of all the sandwiches there.
I'm telling that to my son later.
You remember that? Okay. It took him a while to get to understand that joke. Because I would stand in his crib and go, do you understand? Because of all the sand, which is there, and sandwiches. And then he would sing, I was a big Louis Prima fan. I still am. And he is now, too. And so we used to sing Louis Prima songs. He would be in the crib, and I'd go, every time it rains, pennies from heaven. And then he would go, Shooby dooby. This is like, so the answer to your question is he kind of didn't have a choice. I kind of unleashed the Kraken in him.
That's hilarious. You did.
Family business. It's
the family business. Pass it along. Thank you so much, Julia.
Are we done? We're not done, are we? Oh my
We're
God.
Done, baby.
This is the point where we always say, well, we should get together for lunch.
I know we should get together. Hey, thanks so much for listening, and don't forget to check out our new mini episodes. They drop every Thursday. The next one is more of my chat with Julia Scotti. Check it out because she tells me the best birthday present story ever. Also, if you have a friend who should be celebrated for living their truth, send them this episode. Send them all of our episodes. If you haven't yet, subscribe to this podcast. Stop by Apple Podcasts. Just take a quick little veer there. Give us 5 stars. Leave a review. It really helps us. So thank you. You can follow us on Instagram, TikTok, and Facebook at Parenting Is a Joke. On X, we are at Parenting Joke. We have a Substack with new stuff every single week. So much content. Stop by Substack and search for Parenting Is a Joke. If you're in New York City, I'm performing here in town all week. Find out all my dates at OphiraEisenberg.com. Follow me everywhere at Ophira E. On Instagram, you may have noticed perhaps that I've been doing a push-up challenge. Where am I at? 60 people. That was my goal. I did it. I did 60 push-ups in one day. It felt amazing. Never going to do it again. Just kidding. Trying to sustain. Harder than I think. So I need a new challenge. Feel free to suggest one. Right now, my life is meaningless. Our episode is produced by me and Julie Smith-Clem. Our editor is Nina Porzuki. Our sound designer is Tina Toby Mack. Our digital marketing is done by Laura Vogel. Our video editor is Melissa Weiss. Our overqualified intern is Jeffrey Kaufman. Thank you to all of the engineers at CityBox. And we'll leave you with a little bit more from Julia Scotti.
Men are really weird. It turns out men are really sensitive about penis things. They get... But I had one guy say to me, why would you want to become a woman? I'm like, I don't know, because my salary's too high? Thank you. Another guy said to me, you know what? I feel like you're betraying our gender.
Like, betraying our gender? What are we, spies? What top secret information from the magical world of men do you see me sharing with the women folk? Are you afraid I might tell them that men only need two things? Food and a place to put their penis? And that sometimes those two things are the same.
With every CBD product claiming to do something different, it's nearly impossible to decide what's best for you. Lazarus Naturals pioneered the farm-to-front-door model of transparency where they handle each step of the production process to ensure quality, potency, and consistency. Scannable labels allow you to see the test results of your hemp batch so you can be confident in the safety and quality. Visit LazarusNaturals.com today. Lazarus Naturals, committed to improving your life as well as the world around you. Not available in Idaho, Iowa, or South Dakota.
Right here, right now. Find your beautiful new floor at Right Rug Flooring. Choose from thousands of in-stock styles ready for next day installation and all backed by the right price guarantee. Visit rightrug.com. That's RITERUG.com today to schedule a free in-home estimate or to find a location near you. 24-month financing is available with approved credit. For 90 years, we've been right here, right now. Right Rug Flooring.
Awards Watch says Liam Neeson is at his best. Don't miss In the Land of Saints and Sinners. Having left his dark past behind, retired hitman Finbar Murphy, played by Neeson, leads a quiet life in a remote coastal Irish town. But when a menacing crew of terrorists arrive, Finbar is drawn into a vicious game of cat and mouse, forcing him to choose between exposing his secret identity or defending his friends and neighbors. In the Land of Saints and Sinners, from Samuel Goldwyn Films and Sony Pictures Home Entertainment. Watch it now on digital. Rated R.